I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul became a mantra for me. What it said is, I am responsible for the choices that I make in my life. I am responsible. I am responsible. So obviously I grew up and was better able to articulate what those words really mean. And I discovered in physics class, those of you who remember physics, the third law of motion. You remember what that is? The third law of motion in physics says, for every action, it's called Newton's law, and it says, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So what does that mean? That means everything that you are putting out into the world, every action, bam, there is an equal and opposite reaction. It means no matter what you do, the energy of what you do, what you say, and most important, the energy of who you are is going out into the world, into your home, into your relationships, and that energy is always coming back to you. You are responsible for the energy that you are pulling out into the world, because that very energy, bam, is coming right back to you every single time, whether you believe it or not, because it is law. It is law. It is law that what you put out into the world is coming back. Now, in our country and many countries all over the world, they call this the golden rule. They say, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The truth is, whatever you do is already done. The truth is, so when I learned this, that I am the person who gets to control what comes back to me based upon what I'm putting out. Miss Seeley tried to tell y'all in The Color Purple, that's real. That's law. That's not just some words that Alice Walker wrote. That is law. Everything you try to do is already done. So when I figured that out, oh, what I'm putting out is what's coming back. Let me get real clear about what it is I'm putting out. Real clear. So I read a book about 1989 called Seed of the Soul. And in that book, Gary Zukav talked about the laws of karma, of the laws of cause and effect, the third law of motion. And in that book, he talked about how intention, your intention is always one with the law. Meaning, before you even think about a thing, you have an intention for the thing. And that the intention is going to determine the outcome. That's why the same people can go to the same church service and somebody walk down the aisle just to be seen to put some money in the church, and somebody else who just goes and just has a little bit to offer. The intention with which you give, the intention with which you serve, determines the outcome. So when I figured that out, I went, whoa, I changed everything I did on my show. I called in the producers and I said, from this day forward, I will no longer be speaking to the KKK. I will no longer be speaking to people who are fighting each other in a way that it is damaging to the character of myself and other people who watch. From this day forward, I am only going to do intentional television. And they're like, how are we going to do that and still win? The reason we remain number one for 25 straight years is because every single day I would have a pre-show meeting and have the producers come in and state to me, what is your intention? How do we want to use whoever is on this show, whatever is happening on this show, to serve the audience in a way that fulfills the mission of uplifting, enlightening, encouraging, as well as entertaining? And if it doesn't do that, then I can't do it. I can't put my name on it. So I use this principle of intention for everything. I don't do anything without thinking about what is the real reason. What is the real motivation? What is the energy of my intention that's going to go into my thoughts and action and then be returned back to me? It is law. It's law.
If you are capable of causing depression to yourself, I'm saying this not without any concern for your illness or not due to lack of compassion, because that is the nature of what's happening to you. If you are causing depression to yourself, you are able to generate substantial amount of intense emotions and thoughts, but in the wrong direction. If you don't have very strong emotions, very intense thoughts about something, you cannot get depressed. It is just that you are generating thoughts and emotions which work against you, not for you. So you are strong enough to cause depression to yourself, because for you to cause a mental illness for yourself, unless you're pathologically ill, which is just a small number of people. Rest are all self-created. Most of them are self-created. A few are pathologically ill. They cannot help. It just comes from within because of genetic and other factors. Almost everybody here, if we train them towards a certain kind of thought process and emotion and push them a little bit with the outside situations, almost everybody will go lose their mental balance. They will become clinically ill. They can be driven to madness, I'm saying, because the line between sanity and insanity is very thin. People keep pushing it. You get angry, you're pushing the line. It's a thin line. In fact, when you get angry, you know you're pushing the line. That's why the expression, "I was mad at somebody." You're not mad at somebody, you're just going mad. You cannot be mad at somebody. You're just pushing your sanity, the boundaries of sanity, and moving into insanity for a certain period of time and coming back. You do one thing every day, you try this. 10 minutes a day, try intense anger on somebody. You will see in 3 months' time, you will be clinically dead. Yes. Just try it if you want. Because if you keep pushing the line, you go mad and you come back, you go mad and you come back. One day you're not able to come back, that's all. One day you're not able to turn back, then you're clinically ill. You must understand, even if you got angry for a moment, you're already ill. Maybe you don't get the certificate of diagnosis. They don't slap a certificate on you that you're gone. But you are going, isn't it? You think it's your right to throw tantrums? You think it's your right to get angry with people? You think it's your privilege to be depressed so that you'll get attention from somebody? You keep playing this. One day you will not be able to turn back. Keep crossing the line every day. One day you will see you cannot cross back. That day you need a doctor. Till then, everybody needed a respite from you. But the day you can't cross back, they get the respite because now they can catch you and give you to a doctor. Otherwise, you're temporarily going mad every day, many times a day. They cannot even send you to an asylum. They have to bear with you, your family, your friends, your people around. When you are a child, physical illness is good, because you'll get attention from your mother and father and everybody around you, and you don't have to go to school on that day. So you learn the art of falling physically ill. But once you get married, you learn the art of becoming mentally ill. Because if you want to get attention, you go sit in a corner, act depressed. People will pay attention to you. So you keep playing this game. One day you're not able to cross the line back. That day you're clinically ill. Unfortunately, in many ways, not just in the way that I said now, in many different ways, I would say 70% of illnesses on the planet, all kinds, are self-created. Even if you get an infection, there is a way. If you keep yourself in a certain way, physically and mentally, the virus and the bacteria will not work the same way as it works upon somebody else. If you set yourself like this, no matter what's happening, anyway, I have to go and do this, this, and this. There's no break from that. The last 29 years, I have not been able to cancel one program because I'm running temperature, I got a cold, I got this, I got that. It doesn't matter what's happening. What you have to do, you anyway have to do. You can't turn back on that. Either out of your commitment or you have a boss like that. One way or the other, if it happens, then you will see. You will not at all fall sick so often. Because if you have temperature, you still have to go. If it's summer, you still go, right? Now, a lot of people don't go. It's a little hot outside, they don't go and work. A little cold outside, they don't go and work. A little raining, they won't go and work. A snowflake, they will not go and work. This is just weather. So for every change in weather, if you have the comfort of covering yourself in a blanket and lying down, once you create that, your body will learn to fall sick as often as possible. If you just keep it this way, it doesn't matter what it is. Anyway, I have to go and do what I have to do. You will see your body will just bounce back as quickly as possible, even if it gets the worst kind of infection. So you just have to set the necessary conditions for health, necessary incentives for health, both for yourself and your children if you have them. Do not set incentives for sickness. The child is sick, observe him from a distance. Never go cuddle him. He knows that's the worst time of his life. And he knows he has to get well soon. And give him the best attention when he is joyful. You will see he naturally learns from within. His very chemistry will learn that it pays to be joyful. It doesn't pay to be sick. If you make this very clear to your own biology, to your own chemistry, and to everybody around you, you will see people will not fall sick as often as they are right now. So set that up for yourself. You will see you will get healthy. If you can turn your mind this way, you can also turn it this way. I want you to understand this. No, I am like this because my father abused me when I was 7 years of age. If you know all that bullshit, you can as well turn yourself around, isn't it? It's time. You must understand. Mentally, physiologically, chemically, energy-wise, you must clearly understand it doesn't pay to be sick, unhappy, depressed. It doesn't pay to be joyful and ecstatic. It pays. If you make this clear to all these people inside, they will all behave properly.
You are the sum total of all of the choices that you've made up until now. And anything about yourself or your life that you don't like or isn't working or isn't mobilizing you is to be looked at in terms of, can I grow? Rather than, why did I do it or isn't this wrong? See, the two ways to motivate yourself are deficiency motivation, which says, where I am, I don't like. I don't like what I've done. I don't like the fact that I can't do this well or I can't do that well. So I will list these things in my own repertoire, and then I will be constantly trying to repair those deficiencies, always assuming that I'm deficient, that there's something wrong with me, and I'm trying to fix it. And when you do that, you spend your whole life doing that. And you never arrive, because your life becomes a series of trying to get someplace else. And it is, if you follow that, if you live that, if you behave that, then what happens to you is you become a person who will always suffer from this disease called more. You always have to have more. Because whenever you are getting where you want to go, let's say you want $100,000 in the bank, and you work, and you struggle, and you deny yourself, and you do all of those things, and you finally, you get there, and here you are, you got $100,000 in the bank. All of this stuff over here is, of course, your life, and that is all you know. That's what you know how to, that's how you are. That is your being. That is your way of being. So that when you do get here, what you will do is say, this is not enough. You must, a no-limit person is never operating from deficiency or from lack in their life. They're never saying, I don't have enough. You see, you're never going to get enough. You already are everything. You're everything that you need. Think of it for just a moment. Everything that you need to have total bliss, perfection of your life, you already are. You already have it. You came into this world with nothing. That's how you're going out. And the time that you have here, what you have is your uniqueness, your specialness, and you don't need anything else. Now think on this. If you don't know how to appreciate what you have and where you are in your life, you don't need anything else. Because if you do get something else, you won't know how to appreciate that either. You'll just want more, or you'll want it to be different, or you'll want it to be the way it used to be, or you'll want someone else to be the way you think they should be. Successful people, or no-limit people, or self-actualizing people, or inner-directed people, however you, whatever labels that have been put on them by great thinkers and philosophers and therapists and people that looked at human beings, these kinds of people are people who always have enough. No-limit people are human beings who take what they are and accept it, and don't tell themselves that somehow they're deficient because of anything about themselves. This is a very crucial concept for me and for virtually all of us. It's this idea of taking your life in your own hands and being the kind of person that you choose to be, and understanding that everything that comes your way is an opportunity, is a blessing. And it wasn't until I learned how to celebrate virtually everything that came my way that I was able to transcend it. You see, everything that was given to us by God, whatever that is perfect. No one can deny the mountains are perfect and the rivers are perfect and the birds are perfect and the hippopotamuses are perfect and so on. This is just what was given to us. Everything else that you have on our planet, that we have on our planet, comes about as a result of thinking. Thought makes it so. All right? Everything that you see that wasn't given to us was created by man as a result of the way that we think, So what gets inside of us as a cell comes about as a result of the way that we choose to think in our lives. Very important principle to understand, because once you get a hold of thinking and that it creates everything that you have in your life, you can change and make it as absolutely perfect as you want it to be, because thought makes it so. Bucky Fuller, who I served with on the Hunger Project Advisory Council for 9 years, who died not too long ago, said that 99% of who you are, you can't touch, you can't see, 99% of you is untouchable, unsmellable, invisible. It is what Ken Kies has called your conscious awareness. It's what looks out behind those eyeballs. What is that? It isn't cells. It's some kind of conscious awareness that you are. And make no mistake about it, you've occupied a whole lot of bodies already. Now, this is not reincarnation talk. Although, I don't know about this reincarnation. People ask me if I believe in it. I said, well, I taught in a junior high school in the inner city of Detroit for 4 years. And I saw those dead bodies come to life every day at 3 o'clock. So I believe in reincarnation, all right? Now, if 99% of who you are, you can't touch and you can't feel and you can't smell, then what is it? Who is it? Where are you? What is this thing called your essence or who you are? And where does it go? Now, think of this. You were in a body. I have a little baby girl who's 11 months old. And we were all in a body that size. Well, it's only a body about this big. Fingers only this long. Yeah. Got tiny, tiny little parts all over the place. I mean, she's only this tall. Now, is that her? Is that her essence? Because I have other children who are much older, and I am much older than that, and I can remember being three and being in a different body. Still me, still my essence there, different body, totally different, doesn't even look anything like when I was 11 months old. And then I was 13 and had a funny body, 13. But still my essence was there in a whole new body. Hairs growing all over the place that I didn't understand, all kinds of things happening to it, you know. Then hairs falling out of it later on, you know. Looking at those hairs that fall out and say, what held it in yesterday? You know, I don't even understand that, okay? And so it's like who I am has been in many, many bodies already, all right? And that essence, you see, everything on our planet that is alive can never die. It can never die. Life doesn't die. It just transforms. It just moves on to new places and new ways of being, new ways of being. And the way of being that is the most transcendent of all is this way that comes from seeing yourself as love and only having that to give away. Only having that to give away. Let's say I were to stand up here in front of you and just visualize for a moment that I have an orange. And I take this orange and I squeeze it as hard as I can squeeze it. What's going to come out? Juice. What kind of juice? Or is it apple juice? Any chance? Once in a while? Come on, now and then. A little mango juice come out of an orange once in a while? No mistakes, right? Never, no matter what. Next question. Everybody passes. These are easy, okay? Why? When you squeeze an orange, as hard as you can squeeze it, does orange juice come out? Because that's not because it's an orange. Because that's what's inside, isn't it? On our planet, when you squeeze something, what comes out of it is what's inside. Not too difficult, all right? Does it matter if your mother squeezes the orange? Does it matter what instruments you use? Does it matter if you just had your period and then you squeeze an orange? Does it matter if your boss squeezes it? How about if your kids do it? Your kids squeeze an orange. Does it matter? Does it matter what time of day? Suppose they do it at noon, all right? How about at 4 a.m? Does that matter? Whenever you squeeze an orange, the only thing you get out is what's inside, right? No arguments. Same thing works for you. Same principle works for you. It's a principle of the universe, all right? Someone squeezes you. That is, someone puts pressure on you. Someone says things about you that you don't like. Someone puts tension on you, whatever. Your boss says something to you that you don't like. And out of you comes anger. And out of you comes hatred. And out of you comes fear. Or out of you comes stress. Or out of you comes tension. Why? Is it because of your boss? The way they squeeze you? Never. Is it because of your mother? I mean, she really can be a pain sometimes, right? Is it because of your children? No. What comes out of you always when someone squeezes you is what's inside. This is the vital principle of being a no-limit person. It's so crucial to get this and understand that. That if you have any hatred in your heart for anyone in this world or any anger or any fear or any of those things, it has nothing to do with the rest of the world. It only has to do with what you put inside. Now, how does what gets inside of you get there? That's the key. How does it get there? As you think. Only as you think. You see, there's no anger in the world. There's no stress in the world. There's no tension. It's perfect. We've already established. It's perfect place. It works just fine. It's all flowing the way it's supposed to flow. The evidence for it is, it is. That's all the evidence you need. Just look around you. Everything out there is a mirror. Everything, including you. There are no mistakes.
The moment you start feeling abundant and worthy, you are generating wealth. The moment you're empowered and feel it, you're beginning to step towards your success. The moment you start feeling whole, your healing begins. And when you love yourself and you love all of life, you'll create an equal. And now you're causing an effect. And I think that's the difference between living as a victim in your world saying, I am this way because of this person or that thing or this experience. They made me think and feel this way. When you switch that around, you become a creator of your world and you start saying, my thinking and my feeling is changing an outcome in my life. And now that's a whole different game. And we start believing more that we're creators of reality. If you're not being defined by a vision of the future, then you're left with the old memories of the past and you will be predictable in your life. And if you wake up in the morning and you're not being defined by a vision of the future, as you see the same people and you go to the same places and you do the exact same thing at the exact same time, it's no longer that your personality is creating your personal reality. Now your personal reality is affecting or creating your personality. Your environment is really controlling how you think and feel unconsciously. Because every person, everything, every place, every experience has a neurological network in your brain. Every experience that you have with every person produces an emotion. So some people will use their boss to reaffirm their addiction to judgment. They'll use their enemy to reaffirm their addiction to hatred. They'll use their friends to reaffirm their addiction to suffering. So now they need the outer world to feel something. So to change then is to be greater than your environment, to be greater than the conditions in your world. And the environment is that seductive. So then why is meditation the tool? Well, let's sit down. Let's close our eyes. Let's disconnect from your outer environment. So if you're seeing less things, there's less stimulation going to your brain. If you're playing soft music or you have earplugs in, less sensory information coming to your brain. So you're disconnecting from your environment. If you can sit your body down and tell it to stay like an animal, stay right here. I'm going to feed you when we're done. You can get up and check your emails. You can do all your texts. But right now, you're going to sit there and obey me. So then when you do that properly and you're not eating anything or smelling anything or tasting anything, you're not up experiencing and feeling anything, you would have to agree with me that you're being defined by a thought, right? So when the body wants to go back to its emotional past and you become aware that your attention is on that emotion, and where you place your attention is where you place your energy, you're siphoning your energy out of the present moment into the past, and you become aware of that, and you settle your body back down in the present moment because it's saying, well, it's 8 o'clock. You normally get upset because you're in traffic around this time, and here you are sitting, and we're used to feeling anger, and you're off schedule. Oh, it's 11 o'clock, and you usually check your emails and judge everybody. Well, the body's looking for that predictable chemical state. Every time you become aware that you're doing that and your body is craving those emotions and you settle it back down into the present moment, you're telling the body it's no longer the mind, that you're the mind. The body's no longer the mind. When it finally surrenders, there's a liberation of energy. We go from particle to wave, from matter to energy, and we free ourselves from the chains of those emotions that keep us in the familiar past. And we've seen this thousands of times. In fact, we can actually predict it now on a brain scan.
We're living in such an amazing time right now. I mean, if you are not being challenged in some way in your life, you're not alive. And all of this is an initiation. And I don't believe that you have to go to any school of ancient wisdom perched in the Himalayas or for information or training any longer. If you see your life as the school, as the initiation, then you can no longer be a victim to your life. You're going to have to meet the challenges in your life from a greater level of mind, greater than the mind that created it. And so there have been plenty of peer-reviewed articles on the power of peace-gathering projects, lower crime, that lower trauma incidences of death and economic growth. It's all related to what's happening right now for us. And it's not enough, though, for us to just focus on peace and expect the world to change, because in the peace-gathering projects, when the event was over, a lot of the crime and violence returned back to its ceiling level again. It's more important for us not only to embody that peace and feel it, but then to demonstrate it. And when we begin to demonstrate it, I think we give people permission to do the same. That means that we can't be preaching peace and then be stuck in traffic and, you know, flipping people off or arguing with your coworker. You don't get to stand up for peace if you have conflict in your life. So when we start It's that self-contemplative process of looking within, and instead of judging someone or something, look to see if there's an aspect of ourselves within that person or within that situation that we may need to change. And if we're all doing that at the same time, something greater, a greater consciousness is going to emerge. And so I believe that it should never be about a person. It should be about principles. And when we stand up for principles, that creates community. Because you could be one belief or another belief, but if you're sharing the same principles, which are joy and freedom and cooperation and connection, that's what builds communities. So then everything in our world right now is reminding us of separation. Whether it's war, whether it's violence, whether it's political deceit, whether it's prejudice, all of those things cause us to live by those stress hormones. And when we're living in that state of survival, we're not trusting and we become more selfish. So then starting our day, asking ourselves, what would be the greatest expression of myself I'd like to present to the world? And then making the choice to not get up until we are that person, I think that begins to demonstrate greatness. And when there is adversity and when there are challenges in our life, the question, of course, becomes, how do we become supernatural? And that means we're going to have to do what feels unnatural at first. When everybody else is in poverty and lack, that's the time to give. When everybody else is in fear and vigilance, that's the time to show courage. When people are angry and hating and prejudiced, that's the time to show compassion. When people are competing to rush to get to the top, that's the time to change your energy and draw the experience to you. And if you keep doing what's unnatural over and over again, sooner or later, you're going to become supernatural.